Good morning. So last time we talked a lot about deadlock, which is the problem where we have some thread waiting on some resource. This is holding some resource, waiting on some other resource that is held by a thread, which needs the first thread to give up the resource it's holding. Possibly indirectly, possibly because it's also waiting on another thread, which is waiting on another thread, and so on. We ultimately have this circular dependency that creates this infinite waiting problem that no amount of deciding who gets to run now will solve. And we had three classes of solutions for preventing this. We had an ordering solution, which is that we just avoid cycles by always doing things in an order. So if we like draw the picture of edges connecting who's waiting on what, all the edges go in one direction, we can lay things out so that happens. We had a solution for some resources of just having more copies, like if we're talking about waiting for memory, if you just have enough memory that no one's ever gonna need to wait for it, you don't have a problem. And a solution of just not waiting, either by giving up or by stealing the resource out from under whoever had it. And we mentioned the idea of detecting deadlock, see if processes would finish, hypothetically. So you can just say who holds what, see who would finish, and this generally will detect deadlock. The less general way is you look for cycles, but it doesn't work for things like memory where, you know, just because I have some memory doesn't mean you can't also have some memory, just that if I have most of the memory, you can't also have most of the memory. Then we talked about a completely different topic, which is about, well, threads have all these problems, we have to do synchronization, can we just avoid threads? And I talked about the probably most common way of not using threads, which is event loops, which was that rather than having something where we have a bunch of threads doing different parts of a task, we'd have one thread doing everything, and it would just get events for all the different things that are going on. So like if we have a web server, it would get an event for there's something on this connection from this web browser and handle that in the order they come in. And this for cases where we were using threads because there were a lot of things going on, but we didn't actually need all the cores, this is great in the sense that we avoid all those synchronization problems. It's not great in the sense that our program is perhaps a little less intuitive to write. That rather than writing code where we just say read the command, respond to it, we have to write code which works with this sort of format where we say, what's happening now? Let me respond to it. And figure out like what connection is this for? What's the state of that connection? What command did it last send? Where is it? And so on. So any questions about any of these topics? So I mentioned event loops from last time, and if you want to think about how these are programmed, the essential model is that we take our single-threaded code and we just take all our local variables and stuff them in some struct, and then we make that struct be something we have some table of, and our functions that handle each event just use that struct instead of local variables. That's basically the model. And I'll mention briefly, POSIX has support for this, because the biggest thing that we're missing that we haven't seen for dealing this style of programming is how do I wait for readability on multiple file descriptors? Like I have a pipe open and another pipe, how do I read from both of them at the same time? We don't have a way of doing that that we've seen. POSIX has something called select or pull, which take a list of file descriptors and will tell you which ones of these can you read or write from right now without waiting. And that's sort of one way of building event loops. There's one more way of doing programming without threads, which is pretty common, which is message passing. And here the idea is, instead of having variables and locks, which are shared between threads, every thread is its own process with its own memory, and you explicitly send messages from one process to another, and that's how you take advantage of multiple cores. And this is common mostly because, well, if you have multiple machines and you want to take advantage of, you know, four cores on one machine, four cores on the other machine all at the same time, you need to do something like this anyways. The two machines don't share memory. You can't have a variable on machine A that you can read from machine B transparently. Not that we know of. And the usual idea is that you have a send and a receive function, and you can say send to some ID process some data and receive from another process. And there's extensions to this. And the idea is that you do this instead of putting things in shared variables. And you can use this to coordinate your shared program. And to give a quick example, so you've seen our Game of Life example. We divide up the grid. Most of you probably divided up something like this. Here I'm saying we're dividing it up with processes and not threads because we're not sharing memory. And what you do is you'd say, well, process 3 needs these values, and we'll just choose that it holds the values that are it's computing, and the little slivers it doesn't need, it's just going to get sent as a message. So we'll just arrange for process 2 and process 4 to send that little sliver of values as a message every generation. And similarly, process 3 will send messages to process 2 and 4 with the little slivers they need every generation. So, you know, your pseudocode is, say, all the even processes send messages to the odd ones, then all the odd ones send messages to the even ones. Would be a possible way of organizing that. And some people, this might be easier to program. Maybe, maybe not. Depends who you talk to, whether you like barriers and shared memory better or this. Okay, so that's my end of my brief discussion of things that aren't threads. So any questions about not using threads to solve problems where we want to use threads, either because we have multiple things going on at once, like with the event loop case, or because we're doing one big thing and we want to use multiple cores? Okay, so I'm going to move on to our next topic, which is virtual memory. So you've all, yes, sorry. So
I'm assuming that using event loops, like, you completely avoid deadlock.
So with event loops, do you completely avoid deadlock? You completely avoid deadlock as I'm defining it here because we have one thread typically. If you don't program your event loop right, you could still have problems. So for example, and a very common problem with event loops, it's let's say this function opens a network connection and waits for the network connection to read something. That's going to be really bad because we're going to wait for anything else to happen before that network connection to do something, and you could have a circular dependency from something like that. So a challenge with event loop programming is that this handle read function, you know, this cannot block ever, basically. Because even if it blocks, so if you're waiting on anything in there, in that function, then you're not handling any other connections events. And that's a common problem people have with event-based programming is that they forget something might block. Because every time something might block, you need to make, instead of doing it, you set it up so you get an event when it finishes. And so that's a challenge. And you get some things which look like deadlock from that. But they aren't deadlock as we've defined it because there's only one thread. So other questions? Okay. So our next topic is going to be about virtual memory. Now you've all hopefully seen virtual memory either in 3330 or the closest equivalent that ECE has for computer engineering students. I'm going to do a quick review because I assume no one actually remembers everything about it, and I'd like to discover where we don't know things. So here is a very small toy memory. We're going to do virtual memory for to start out with, and then we'll quickly move on to what 32-bit x86 actually does. 32-bit x86, because this is what x86 does, and I'll show you x86's actual code for setting up virtual memory. And I'll note we'll have an assignment which will involve doing things with x86's code for dealing with virtual memory, so that's an extra incentive, perhaps. So, with virtual memory, we take our program's addresses and we divide them up into chunks we call pages. The program addresses are going to be called virtual addresses, so we'll call the chunks of those addresses virtual pages. These are virtual addresses because they might not be the real addresses on the underlying machine because we're running multiple programs. We do address translation. Two different programs are in memory at the same time, and they both think that they have some code and address, in this case, like 50. And that's fine, that their code is really going to be located at two different places in memory with physical addresses, even though they have the same virtual address when each program is running. So we have these virtual pages, and we typically divide the virtual pages up, so we can take the upper bits of the address, and that's the number of the virtual page. So we're always going to choose a power of two size for our pages, so this can work this way, which is sure makes everything easier both in software and in hardware, to take an address like 3FF, and we can extract the 3 at the top in this case to get the page number. And this works for any address, and it's really handy in hardware, and in software when we get an address for some reason and need to figure out where is, as we'll learn, the page table entry for this address. The rest of the address is called the page offset. This is the location in the page of the, in this case, 2^8 bytes of the page. Which one of them does this address refer to? So any questions about this picture? Yeah. The reason that we can take the top bits and it's a virtual page number is because the page size is a power of 2, because that means when we divide by the power of 2, we just take off the last bits. So when you divide by 2^8, just like we take off 8 bits to get the result of the division rounded down, just like if you divide by 10^3, you take off 3 decimal digits to get the result of the division rounded down. And that's something we want because we sure, you know, we could do paging with a page size of like 17 bytes, but then we'd have to divide our addresses by 17, and that is would be really inconvenient in hardware. Okay, so once we have these pages, we're going to map each of the pages to a range of physical addresses. We're going to divide up our physical addresses, that's our real machine memory, the same way we divide up our virtual addresses into chunks of this page size. And again, we'll have the trick that we can look at the top bits of the physical address to find the page number, which is equivalent to dividing by the page size and rounding down. So we'll set up a mapping of some sort, where we decide where each of these pages goes, and we'll write down that mapping in a table, and this table is called the page table. And the page table is going to have, in this, when we're starting out, an entry for every virtual page number, which tells us what physical page to go to. And we'll also, in fact, store extra information besides the physical page, like should you be allowed to read or write this, that the processor can use when it's figuring out the physical page. It can do a little extra work for us and say, oh, I should allow you to write this, I shouldn't allow you to write this. Yes?
Can you go over the mapping?
Which part of the mapping?
Like, how do you match the virtual addresses to a physical address?
So how do I match the virtual addresses to a physical address? So if I have a virtual address, like 10110 1101. I need to know the page size. And here the page size is 2^8, which means that these 8 bits are the page offset, and this is the virtual page number. So once I've gotten the virtual page number by taking off the page offset bits, I say, okay, so virtual page number 10, that's in this table, it says none, so that's invalid. If I say had an address which had a valid virtual page number, like here I have 11, I look up that in here, I see the physical page number is 000. So I take this virtual page number and I replace it with the thing I looked up in the table. So I replace it with 000 from the table here, and the rest of the address, the page offset, stays the same. And I, in fact, have a picture for this. So the what? So yes, so you do a lookup on the page table. Yeah, so you take the you find the virtual page number, you look up that row in the page table. And in a real page table, we have some extra information besides the page number. For example, we can't actually write none as a page number, so we have a valid bit. That's how we represent whether it's valid or not, and that's one of the things we'll also check. So any questions about this level of paging before I move on? Because my next thing is I'm going to review 2-level page tables, which you should also have seen before, but maybe a little fuzzy, and are in fact what x86 uses, so we need to go over them. And also, everyone, you know, this scheme does not scale to 4 gigs of RAM. Yeah?
So the virtual and physical pages have to have the same size?
So the question is, the virtual and physical pages have to have the same size? Yes. Yes. Because we map each virtual page to a single physical page. Okay, so those are our page table entries. Okay. So these page table entries, so this is a nice scheme. When we have like 4 gigs of RAM, we're gonna have millions of pages, and that would be a lot of space. Megabytes of space, that's not really acceptable, so we want a more compact way of storing page tables, which requires us to do something other than have every single page table entry in memory or in some storage. Turns out the storage will use this memory, but even with memory, we don't want to waste a megabyte for every process on page table entries, even if the process, say, you know, is only using like 1 megabyte of memory, we still might need an extra megabyte for its page table if we use this sort of scheme. So what we'll use instead is 2-level page tables that will have, that will take our address and we'll take our VPN and we'll split our VPN up into groups. So in this case, I have a 20-bit VPN. So this whole thing is 20 bits, and I've split it up into the top 10 bits and the bottom 10 bits. And we use the top 10 bits to determine which row in the first level table we go to. And the bottom 10 bits determine which row in the second level table we go to. And because addresses, virtual page numbers 0 through 3FF share the same top 10 bits if they're 20 bits, they all go to the same row, and so on. And the next, and 400 through 7FF all have, the top 10 bits have all zeros and a one, so it goes to the row one, and so on. And each of these, we can have each of these first level page tables, instead of pointing to a physical page with data, they point to a physical page which has the page table for the next level, for which we'll use the next 10 bits of the virtual page number. And then we have, of course, after this in the address, we have the page offset, which doesn't come up until we get to this second level table. So our lookup is that we take our address, we take the top 10 bits, we choose a row in the first level table, we take the next 10 bits and we choose which of the rows in the second level table we want to go to based on that. Then we have a page table entry, we look at that, we find out where the physical page actually is, or we find out, oh, there isn't anyone. The reason this saves us space is that we're often going to have big ranges of virtual pages that aren't mapped to anything. So for example, if you think of a program that you just started, your heap is pretty small and you know it grows upwards. All that space isn't allocated in your page table because you can't access it yet until you allocate more memory. So all those page table entries we can just mark as invalid in the first level table, saying that there's nothing you would need to look at in the second level table. This entire range of virtual page numbers maps to nothing. Okay, so question?
So does that mean the space you're saving is not having stored page tables?
Question, does that mean the space we're saving is not storing page tables? Yes. So we're storing only, we always store a first level page table, but as long as we don't have to store all the second level page tables, we should save some space. So our first level page table, so a typical, as I mentioned, we have our valid bit because we can't actually, because every physical page number is valid, we need to have a separate bit to say, is this nothing? And then we have some other bits like permissions, like can this be accessed in user mode or not? Can this be written to? And so on. And our first level table has the address, which is the physical page number of the next page table. And our second level page table has the same structure, but instead of the address being of the next page table, it's the address of the actual data that the program is looking for. Okay, so any more questions on this? Okay, so in x86 32-bit, the way that XV6 uses it, what I showed you before is exactly how our addresses are split up. So we have our page offset, which is the bottom 12 bits of a 32-bit address, which means that pages are 2 to the 12 bytes, or 4K. And we have our virtual page number, which is split into two 10-bit parts. X86 has some quirky terms for this. So x86 calls the first level page tables page directories, and the second level page tables page tables. I am sorry that this is very confusing. So we call the first 10 bits in the XV6 code called the page directory index. This is also the term the Intel manuals use. And the next 10 bits are called the page table index. And XV6 has some macros to extract the different parts of an address, and also to construct an address if you know the page directory index and the page table index and the page offset, which are just C bit fiddling stuff that you may or may not remember about, but that they've already figured out for you, so you don't have to write it every time. And I guess I should note that there's another view of what happens, which might be better to look at, is that we take the page table-based register, we take the first part of the virtual page number, we get a row in the first level table, second part in the second level table, and then we find the physical page where we find out where we are, similarly by finding what row of the page with the page offset. Okay, so that's 32-bit x86 paging. Any questions on that?
Yeah. So could I add a new level and keep the page size the same? Does that mean your you're dividing those like 10 bits into even more.
Yeah, so if we added a new level and kept the page size and the address size the same, that would mean we were dividing the address in more parts. Just dividing up the virtual page number into more parts, assuming the page offset size stays the same. It turns out that x86-32 also has a mode with three-level page tables. And the purpose of that is to support bigger physical addresses, which means having less space for other things in the page table entries. Which means having bigger page table entries. That's all. That means having less page table entries per page for the first and second level page table. But we're not gonna look at that. But yes, so the advantage of dividing it up in more pieces is that you divide it up, you can have the same size page table and put more stuff in it. It's the biggest reason you do that. Or that you can have more holes than page tables more efficiently. That you can have a bigger hole with one page table entry and a top level page table. Okay, So just as a quick check, two exercises. So given this, given these sizes, how big are these page tables with one valid page? So I have a process with one valid page. How big are its page tables? And that, this should be both be page tables. Someone want to tell me, what do we have? We have two level table. So how big are all the page tables? What does that look like? So we have our page table base register, which points to a first level page table. And what's it going to be in there if we have exactly one valid page? What needs to be in there? Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to have a full page table here. So we're going to have 2 to the 10 rows, that is page table entries times 4 bytes for a page table entry, which is written here. So this is going to be 2 to the 12 bytes. And you mentioned that all but one of them is going to be invalid. So we're going to have one valid one here. And where's that going to point? Anyone? Yeah.
Another page table.
So this is going to point to our second level page table. And it's going to have the same situation. We're going to have 2 to the 10 rows. And therefore, this is going to be 2 to the 12 bytes. So we're going to have, in this case, we're going to have 2 to the 13 bytes used by the page tables, or 2 pages. Questions on figuring that out? Note that we couldn't omit any rows because we have to have the row to know that there's nothing there. We have to read something and find out that, oh, it's invalid. Okay. So how about the next question? So if we have all the 4K pages populated, so it processes every single part of memory is valid, how much space do we need for those page tables? Yeah. 2 to the 12 times 2 to the 12. So why 2 to the 12 times 2? So 2 to the 12 is the size of each page table.
Yeah, wouldn't each row have its own page table?
Yes, but we have 2 to the 10 rows. Because the 12 is counting for that, that we have 4 bytes per page table. Yeah, so right idea, 2 to the 12 times 2 to the 12 for the second level. Plus, we also have an extra 2 to the 12 for the first level. So we'll have, in that case, we'll have all the second levels, and this is going to be a total of 2 to the 10 times 2 to the 12, plus we have this first level 2 to the 12. Yeah?
How did you get the 2 to the 13?
2 to the 12 plus 2 to the 12 is 2 times 2 to the 12, which is 2 to the 13. Okay, so, that's review. So, these are the x86 pages that we use here. And I'm gonna show you what these 4-byte page table entries look like. So this is a table from the Intel manual, which shows page table entries at every level. So first, it shows you what the format of the page table base register is. So the page table base register, which is called CR3, which stands for Control Register 3. Why they didn't name it page table base register, I don't know. But they didn't. Has the address of the page directory, which is this is the equals the first level page table. And you note that this address is only the top 20 bits of this 32-bit register. That's because the address is the address of a page, is the number of the physical page rather than a byte address. And that's what Intel does throughout this, is that they have page addresses that the number of the page rather than a byte address. And if you wanted to put your page table not at a multiple of 2 to the 12, well, sorry, you can't. They also have some other bits in here which we won't talk about. So then we have first level page table entries, which have 3 different formats. So I'll start with the bottom. The bottom is that if the last bit is 0, then it's invalid. So the last bit, bit 0, the least significant bit, is the present bit. And if it's 0, there's nothing there, and the processor ignores the rest of the page table entry. You can put whatever you want in it, which is a feature. If it's 1, then above this we have the normal case, where we have the address of the next page table, the second level, and we also have some extra bits. So we have a read or write writable bit, we have a can be accessed in user mode bit, and we have some other bits that are mostly not important. We'll talk about this A for access bit probably after the exam. There's also a format above this, which is labeled as 4 megabyte pages. So a feature that x86 has, and a lot of processors have, is that even though the normal size for a page is 4K, you can also have larger pages. And the way that works is rather than pointing to a page table, a second level page table, we just say, here's the address of the data directly. You don't need a second level page table to get it. And it's for the entire set of virtual page numbers that would have been in a next level page table. So rather than going to a second level page table, you just say, here's your address. You just take the rest of your virtual page number and put it in here, and that's your address. There's also some bits for if you want physical addresses which are bigger than 32 bits here, which is a very awkward way of supporting memories that are bigger than 4 gig. So Intel has a better solution for that, which I'm not showing. But the idea of this larger pages is that if you actually were allocating the entire memory to a program, as long as you can allocate contiguous chunks of physical memory, you can use these bigger pages for those programs that use a lot of memory, but still use the small pages for the programs that, you know, only use 2 megs of memory, where you wouldn't want to allocate them memory in 4 megabyte chunks. So x86 never uses the 4 megabyte pages, as far as I know. It just uses the the second level page tables and 4K pages. So at the bottom, we have our second level page table entries. We have the same sort of permission bits. We have our writable, user mode, this A I'll talk about later, this D we'll talk about later, and these we probably won't talk about. These. And note here we have the address of a page name. This is a page number. And here, this is a page number. Because it's not a 32-bit address, which we would need to get out of memory. So any questions about what's on here? Okay, so a notable thing about the way x86 designed these page table entries is that it's designed so you can more easily construct page entries. So if you get, if you take these bottom 12 bits and you zero them out, then you get the byte address from a page number, because remember, we take a page number, we make a page offset of zero, we add that to the end of the address, we get the full physical byte address of that page. And if you just zero out those bottom 12 bits, you turn the page table entry into the byte address that it's referring to, the base address of the page. And that's a deliberate design. That's why they put the page numbers at the top of the page table entries, just so you could do that. It also means that constructing page table entries is pretty simple. You just take the physical address of the page and you OR in these flag bits so you have some value with the writable and the present bit set. You just OR that with the physical address. There's your page table entry. Really handy, except it has the problem that it turns out that you want page table entries that store more than 32-bit addresses, which later versions of x86 obviously fix. Okay, and x86 has a header file for dealing with this format. So they have defines for all the bits that we set for permissions. Probably the most notable one is this one called P for present. This is the same as a valid bit, which is the bottom bit. If you remember this format, if we have a 1 here, it's valid. If we have a 0, it's not. And so they have a define, which is that bit, and you can AND with it to see if it's set. You can OR with it to set it on something that might not have it set, and so on. And they have defines for all the other bits at the bottom, and they have some convenient macros which do the bit fiddling to extract the physical byte address from the page number and to extract the flags to remove the physical byte address from a page table entry. Okay. Any questions on this? So that's the format of page tables. So let's talk about how x86 decides to lay out memory, which is very similar to what most OSs seem to have gravitated towards as far as how they lay out memory. So this is a picture of the overall layout of memory. We have on this side, this is the virtual layout. And all this stuff in blue is for the kernel. All this stuff in green is for the user. So one thing x86 does, which is a very common thing, is that we have some address. x86 chooses halfway. And everything above that address is for the kernel. That this is memory, which is going to be, first of all, mapped to the same addresses in every single process. So when we're writing code in the kernel, we can have a pointer, and no matter what process is running, that pointer points to the same thing. That's really handy because we don't have to like have different code in each process, different pointers. And all this memory is not accessible to the program. So all the page table entries are marked with the kernel mode only setting. We're not marked as accessible in user mode. So if the user program tries to access any memory address above 8000000, they'll get an error. They'll get a page fault. It will, and the OS will kill the program. This means that we've sacrificed giving the programs all the possible addresses they could have, but hopefully we have enough that we don't really care. But what we've gotten in exchange is that writing the code in the kernel is a lot easier. Because we always, when we switch to kernel mode, have this memory that's always the same laid out that way. And XV6 does something which is pretty common. Most operating systems don't quite do it this way, but pretty close. And that they've chosen to have a really simple mapping from kernel addresses to physical addresses in this region of memory. So what XV6 did is it just says that we just map, address, this base address plus X is mapped to physical address X. We just set up the page table entries. So the first virtual page number is mapped to physical page 0, and that after this base address, second one is mapped to physical page 1, and so on. We just have straight mapping to physical addresses. This means that if I get a physical address, it's really easy to read its value. I don't need to figure out what page table entry has it. I just add the base address, that's where it is. And we just have this one-time setup cost where you need to set all the page table entries to make this happen. And a consequence of this is that we have to load our kernel code into contiguous addresses to take advantage of this, but that's not a big deal. Nothing else is running. We don't have to worry about not having space to do that. So questions about this layout? And because of this, XV6 has two macros that the memory management code uses a lot. One is V2P, one is P2V. These convert virtual to physical and physical to virtual. And by convert, they just assume that you have an address that's in that kernel space and they subtract the base address or add it. If you pass these a user address that's not part of that, they won't work correctly and there won't be an error. So that's the kernel part of it. We also have the user part of memory. This is where XV6 makes some choices, which is not what typical OSs do. You may remember that usually the stack's at the top of memory and grows down towards the heap. To keep things simpler, XV6 has decided that the heap is at the top of memory and grows up, and the stack doesn't change in size. So that's our layout. We'll talk more about the heap a little later. So I talked about the page table structure. We have our page layout. Let's talk about, we know what the page table looks like. How do we actually use that to set up the page table and to manipulate the page table in code? And XV6 has this handy utility function which shows the typical pattern for writing that sort of code. This is something we need to do all the time in OS, is that we get an address, we need to figure out where's the page table entry for that address so I can either, make it valid, make it invalid, and so on. This is a very common task, so XV6 has a utility function that's used in a lot of places where we give it an address, we give it a process's first level page table, and it says, okay, here's where the page table entry for that address is. This function also takes a parameter where, if necessary, it can allocate a first second level page table if one is missing. So if we have a big hole and you want to allocate memory in that hole, we might need to allocate a second level page table to have the page table entry for you to fill in. And this function will do that if you ask it to. And the way this works is we have, there's some type defs. So PDET and PTET are just type defs for unsigned int because our page table entries are 32 bits. And we're going to just use them as unsigned ints. We're going to use bit fiddling you know, bitwise AND and so on to extract the parts of them. So we use our macro to extract the top 10 bits of the address. We use that to index into our first level page table, which we're treating as an array of 32-bit ints, which is fine because that's the size of each page. It's an array of 32-bit page table entries, so we get the appropriate index of that array. We get the address of that. Then we check using that if the present bit is set. So this is valid if the first level page table entry is valid, and if it is, we extract the physical page number from it and convert it to a virtual address. By convert it to a virtual address, I mean we get one of those addresses that's in that kernel region of memory that corresponds to the same physical address. And then we do the same lookup. We have the base address of an array of page table entries. We look up the index, which we have a macro to get in that page, array of page table entries, and get a pointer to that. So questions on this? Make sense? Code? Use? And what I haven't showed you is that we have our second case that sometimes we need to allocate a page table entry. So we have code where we allocate a page. Kalloc, I'll talk about later, is the page allocation function. So XV6 has one way of allocating memory. You can get a page of memory at a time. That's it. There's no allocate 2 megs. You get a page. So we call that function. We set it to 0. This works because if we have the bottom bit 0, it's going to be not present. It's going to be invalid. That's why we want things to start out if we don't specify anything. And then we create a page table entry. And the way we do that is we take the physical address we want it to point to. This is our first level page table entry, so that we want it to point to the second level page table we just allocated. And we mark it as present and writable and accessible from user mode. In XV6, they've chosen that all the first level page table entries are marked as writable and accessible from user mode. They'll just set the second level page table entries to not be writable or not be accessible from user mode if they need to. And the processor will use the most restrictive one. Okay, so questions on this? So this gives us our get a page table entry function. And just like here, I'm showing setting the first level page tables. We can use this later on to set second level page table entry. So here we call the function for each virtual page to get the page table entry, possibly allocating it if we need to. If it's not already set, we just use the same pattern to take a physical address, add the permission bits, and set up a page table entry. And this is a function XV6 uses to it calls map pages. It sets up the mapping from virtual to physical for a range of addresses. Okay. So questions on this? Yeah. This one?
What is the address?
Oh, here? What is which part?
The PTE address.
This remove flag bits and get the physical address in the page table entry. So it's extracting this piece here of the page table entry and turning it into a byte address. Other questions? Okay. So we've seen our utility functions for setting up page table entries. And this lets us talk about, you know, what do we actually do to set up a process's page tables? And in x86, there are three steps here. So one is that we have to create a new page table with the kernel mapping. So I told you that everything above that kern-based address is the same in every process. That isn't free. You have to do something to make that happen. So every page table has the top part. We just run this function that sets it up all the same way every time. We call map pages a bunch of times, that function I just showed you, to set up this kernel-only part of the page table in every process the same way, but we have to do it by hand, duplicate it for every process. Then we have to actually load the pages from the executable. And the way executables work in XV6 and most operating systems is that they contain a list of, here's something you need to load to this address in what we call the headers. So in XV6 uses the ELF format, and the ELF format has an array of these structures which tell the OS what you need to do. So we have, is this something you need to load? Where do you load it from? Where do you load it to? And we just go through this list and allocate space according to where we have to, you know, what we have to load and where. And we then load into that address, the address that's specified, from the appropriate part of the file. So XV6 has this alloc function, which takes a range from old to new and just allocates that range of pages. And the way it does it is it iterates through that range, allocates a page, maps it using that map function I showed you earlier, which makes a new page table entry and sets it up with the permission bits it specifies, which in this case is going to be writable and accessible in user mode and present. So we allocate the pages, and XV6 has a separate step for copying the pages from the file. So this is a function which takes, here's an address I want you to copy to in this page table, this first level page table, from this file at this location. And so what this function does is it first loads the page table entry that we just allocated, and then it's going to look up, using that page table entry, where we need to load the data. So, question. Why is XV6 taking this address we need to load to, looking it up in a page table, then using that address to turn it back into a virtual address, we have P to V later on, instead of just copying to it directly? What is the problem that prevents us from just copying to that address directly? Why do we look up the page table entry, find its physical address, turn that back into a virtual address so we can copy to it using this readi function, which is basically the in-kernel version of read? Why can't we just use that address directly? What might be the problem? Yeah. In case it's invalid. So why wouldn't it be valid? What are we doing when we're writing this code? What's this code? What am I saying we're setting up? Yeah.
If maybe you're out of memory because you're allocating page tables.
So the question is about running out of memory. We have a different solution for that, which is just to fail. Like, yeah.
If it's like part of the memory that belongs to the kernel.
So the question, if it's part of the memory that belongs to the kernel, that's not something this deals with. So note that what I said on the previous slide is that we are loading executable pages from a file. So this is being called from, like, where would you guess this is being called from? What system call would be doing this? Hint, it's one you've used in the shell assignment. Exec. So during exec, we are creating a new page table to replace the current one. And the problem is that that's not our current page table. If we read from address or write to address with our current page table, that's not the one we're using now. We're going to read from some completely different memory. So this function's looking up in the page table because this is not the active page table yet. So this here is the new not yet ready page table. So it's not set as our current page table. That's why we can't use it. That's why we look up manually how to figure out each address in it. And this is something that you often have to do in the kernel, is that you're not writing the process that you need to deal, running the program that you need to set it, deal with the page table for. So you need to do things like this where you look up a page table entry, figure out where it is, rather than use the address directly, because that page table is not yet active. Okay. So any other questions about this? Yeah.
So what exactly would be the consequence?
So the question is, would it fail? So think if we're running exec, and we have something's going to be probably going to be at that address, because like where we're loading is probably where the code for the program we're like our shell is. So we're going to overwrite the code for our shell with the program we're trying to load. Then we're going to switch to this new page table, and since we didn't load into that address, it's probably just going to be all zeros. And we try to execute it, and it's going to fail, because we didn't actually load the program into the right place, the place where we were actually executing. So another solution would have been that we could make this the page table earlier. That's a bit problematic, because one of the things you want to do is that, let's say this read I fails, let's say we can't read from the disk for some reason, or we run out of memory. What we want to do is we want to return from exec with a failure. And that's hard to do if we replace the page table already. So we don't replace the page table until we know that the exec's going to work. So we can return if we need to. Okay. Other questions on this? Okay. So I mentioned this kalloc function. So this is XV6's memory allocator. And it's very simple, because it only allocates whole pages and deallocates whole pages. And for most operating systems, they can't quite get away with a memory allocator this simple. Unfortunately, you sometimes have to allocate larger chunks of physical memory for various reasons, like those big pages I showed you earlier, or because some devices are picky and want you to give them 8 kilobytes that's not at different addresses. But most of the time, this is all you need to do, which means you can use a really simple algorithm to implement your allocator. And this is what XV6 does. It has a linked list of free pages, and it stores the list nodes in the pages themselves. We're not using the free pages for anything else, so let's just use them for a list node structure. Kalloc just removes the first entry of the list. Kfree just adds something to the list. So these are really fast, nothing complicated. And you just create the linked list at boot. XV6 has a hard-coded physical memory size that it uses. And that's all it does. And this is way, way simpler than malloc and free, because we don't need to worry about what if I allocate 2 megabytes, what if I allocate 32 bytes, and how do I not waste space when I'm doing that. Here, everything's the same. We just, it's just one linked list operation for alloc and free. Okay, so we looked at loading programs, we looked at the program layout, we know how, under the hood, we both set page table entries and find the physical pages for them. There's one thing we haven't done, which is deal with the heap. So XV6 tracks one piece of information about program's memory after it loads them, and that's the size. And the size is the maximum address in the heap that's valid. And you can adjust that size with the SBRK system call. And this is a common Unix system call. Linux has this system call too, and it adjusts where the end of the heap is. And so the SBRK system call, it takes an amount, it does size plus equals amount. And it also adjusts the page table to correspond with that. So here's the actual code for that system call in XV6. So we retrieve our amount, we get our size, we call this grow function, which changes the size of the heap, and we return the old size. Return the old size as a convenience, so you can call SBRK with 0 to figure out where is the top of my heap now. Just ask to grow your heap by nothing, it will return where the old heap was. Okay. And so we have this growproc function, which just calls the function to that we saw earlier, that we, the same function we use when we set up a new program, which just allocates a range of addresses. We have a corresponding one which deallocates it, which just iterates through the page table and clears the page table entries and frees the pages that they point to. So, questions about this? So this is the memory allocation function we provide in the kernel. Note that this doesn't look like malloc at all. So malloc is implemented entirely on top of this. So malloc just moves where the heap is, it figures out what to do about the heap, what to do with that extra space, and that's not the kernel's job. That's whoever wrote malloc's job. And XV6 has a malloc in user space, which works this way. It just calls sbreak, and it has some way of managing the memory. And this is the same thing which happens on Linux typically, that we have a malloc, which calls these simpler functions that the kernel provides to allocate memory, and it manages that memory in some more fancy way. The kernel doesn't know anything about each thing you malloc. Okay, so this is all the cases setting up page table entries, allocating more memory, deallocating memory, same function. And now let's talk about the last thing, which is dealing with what happens when page table entries aren't there. So page faults. So XV6, right now, the way it handles page faults is that they go to the default case in trap.c. So some of you saw this in the scheduler assignment, because if you had a divide by 0, well, that triggers a trap. That trap doesn't have a handler in XV6, so we end up running this piece of default code or something like it. Yeah. Or if you write code which segfaults in user space, you'll get this, and so on. So if we run this code in user space, which tries to access some memory address that we don't have, so my program does not have enough memory allocated on my heap, so that's valid. So this is going to trigger a page fault. The page is marked as not present. The processor helpfully tells the OS, hey, why don't you handle this for me? So the OS does. And the OS handles it, but it goes to this default case in trap.c where it prints out, hey, this process ID got, which has this name when it was exec, got this trap number, which had this error code, which was on this CPU number, which was at running this address in the code, and it had this thing labeled adder, which comes from this RCR2 function. And if we run that for this, we see actually useful information. Not obvious information, but useful information. So first, we have a trap number of 14. And if you look up in traps.h, so That's the code for T underscore PGFLT, which is a very annoying abbreviation of page fault. So that's the code the processor has chosen for page fault type of traps. It's just that XV6 assumes that if we have a page fault, we just print this message and kill the program. Right now. We also actually get the address printed out that we were trying to access. So in XE6, they put this address in control register 2. Why they don't call it something more useful, I don't know. But it's in control register 2. RCR2 is a utility function that does the assembly magic to read from control register 2. And so that's how we get the address. And if we wanted to do something intelligent about this, we could make a handler based on this information. So we'd say, oh, the trap number was a page fault. I'm going to take my address, and I'm going to look at that address, possibly set up a page table entry, or I'm going to actually kill the process. So if we wanted to extend XV6 to handle page faults, well, we can do that. And when we return from a page fault, assuming we don't kill the program, killing the program, we don't return. But if we return normally from a page fault, it will re-execute the faulting instruction. That's how the processor sets up things to happen when it runs our page fault handler. Just like when we run a system call, it sets us up to return to the instruction after the system call. For a page fault, it sets up to rerun the instruction that caused the page fault to happen. Which is handy because this means that if we set up a page table entry for the address and just return from the fault normally, go back to the code, it's going to rerun, try that, and it will work this time, assuming we set up the page table entry correctly. So this idea makes sense. And this is a very common pattern in OSs, and we'll talk a bunch about what you do with page faults. And the key idea here is that we're checking the process control block to see if the access is okay. That we're assuming that sometimes the page table will say, no, this isn't okay, but it's wrong. That we haven't done something that, you know, because that the OS, that the, we haven't done something for the processor to know that this is valid, but we know it's valid because we have extra information that we store in our process control block, which tells us, yeah, this really is valid, I just need to do some extra work to tell the processor how to deal with it. So the OS is going to have some extra data structures to do these sorts of tricks. So we're going to have some extra data structure besides the page table, which tells us what memory is actually valid, what should be there. And this is sort of not quite what XV6 does now. In XV6, they have one variable which tells us what should be there, which is the size, the SC, the top of the heap. But all the information about what memory is valid is in the page table in the current implementation of XV6. That XV6 doesn't do any of these tricks that I'm going to talk about. Just everything is always allocated in the page table. So the page table has the current state. In real OSs, we're going to do tricks where that's not going to be the case. So I'm going to go through some of these tricks. You may have seen these before vaguely in 3330 and forgotten them or not. So a big one is space on demand. So in XV6, they allocate one page for the stack. That's awfully inconvenient if you might want to have more than 4K in local variables, maybe. A lot of you tried to do that for various reasons. But some programs don't use much stack space, some use a lot. So you'd like to, you know, not waste all this extra space you're allocating just in case I put a 1 megabyte array and expect it to work as a local variable. You know, because most programs don't do that, but some do. So I have all this wasted space, and the OS would like to just allocate that extra space only if you're actually using it. Only if you actually have a 1 megabyte array am I going to actually allocate that extra space. Otherwise, you know, if you only use 12K, I'm only going to allocate you 12K of stack space. And we can use this pattern to do this. So you try to use more stack space than I've allocated for you. I just don't allocate it in advance. I just get a page fault. The OS looks up, oh, what should be there? Is the address okay? Yeah, it's the stack. I'm just gonna see what's there. I'm gonna allocate it. I'm gonna restart it by returning from the exception, and that handles it. And this is a very common thing OSs will do. So this is how I can, you know, give your process, you know, megabytes of stack by default and not have every program you run use megabytes of memory. Because if you don't actually use those megabytes of stack I'm giving you, this never happens. I never allocate the page. If you do, it still works. And you just, you know, have a little bit of a blip in performance if you're paying really, really close attention when I have to do this allocation. So any questions on this logic? Okay. So the assignment that I'm planning on doing after the exam, one of the things to do is to add this feature to XV6 for heap memory. So XV6 tracks how big the memory is with this size variable. And right now, it just always allocates the memory eagerly. Whenever you change the size of the heap, it just allocates the memory right away. And you can just change it not to do that. So on a page fault, if the address it's accessing is greater than this size, that means you know that the page table is right, it's not valid, you're going to kill the process, just like you would before, because that's a seg fault. If it's less than or equal to that, you know, okay, my information says this is your memory, so I'm going to make sure it works by fixing up the page table so it will work, I'm going to return, have you rerun that thing, and it's going to be fine. That's how you add that logic. So on other OSs, it would be a little more complicated because like we know on Linux that our valid memory isn't just zero to a maximum address. It's more complicated than that. So there's some more complicated data structure we have to look up. Is this actually address actually okay? But it's the same concept. We just have a different data structure. It's not just less than some size. There's a list of ranges. We have to check all the ranges and so on. And we'll get to what that sort of data structure might look like after the exam. Okay, the other big trick we can do with page tables is making fork not be really horrible. So in XV6, if you look at the implementation of fork, there's this function called copyUVM, which iterates through the pages in a page table and copies one pages from one to the other by allocating a new page for the copy, copying the contents of the page, and setting up a new page table entry. So it copies the whole process for fork, and what do you usually do after fork? What's almost the first thing you do after fork? Who remembers from your shell assignment? Like, what were things you did after fork? Yeah. Calling exec is the main thing you did. Like, you did a little bit of extra stuff, then you called exec, and exec immediately made a new page table which replaced all that work and all those allocated pages, which we then deallocated. So this seems really wasteful. And it's fast enough, but we sure would like to do better. And the trick is that we can share data. And for some things, this is simple. So like, for code, it's just read-only, we share it. For writable data, we can't really do that, right? We can't just share that. We can't just have them be the same page because you modify a vector or something in the child process. You don't expect to see that in the parent process. You don't want some changes you made before you exec to show up after you exec. So we can't actually share that. But there's an observation that sharing the writable data is fine as long as no one changes it. Doesn't matter if it's writable if no one actually writes it. And that's going to be the case for most of our writable data. When you're just execing, you're like gonna change a little bit of memory, like you're gonna like add some things to the stack, but most of your memory is gonna be unchanged. So we can do this trick where we just copy the page table entries, but set them to not writable. That we take our original page table, instead of making a copy by allocating a new page, copying the data for each one, we just mark all the pages as not writable and mark both copies as read-only. And when either process tries to write to a read-only page, this triggers a fault. So, which would run the page fault handling code I showed you earlier, and from that code, we just actually copy the page and change the page table entry so the write will work. Okay. And that's basically sort of how we do fork efficiently. There's one tricky part, which is how do we eventually deallocate pages if we're doing this? This means we need to track extra information about pages. The simplest thing to track is a reference count. That for each page, you track how many copy processes are referring to this, and when you do the copy and write operation, or when you deallocate the page, you decrement that. If it goes to zero, you actually free the page, and this keeps you from freeing it too early. You don't want, when I fork an exec and I get rid of the child process's page table, you don't mean to deallocate all those pages that are also in the parent's page table. That would be really bad. Okay, so that's what I have for today. So next week we have an exam. My plan is that Tuesday, I do exam review. My plan for exam review is that if you don't ask me questions, I don't talk about something. So please come with things you'd like me to talk about that you might want to know for the exam.